the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site that covers your Arizona Cardinals. And with me in episode 527 is my co-host, Seth Cox, from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the SB Nation Arizona Cardinals site, and one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. Good time for that show this time of year, as we are nearly into, like, full-on draft stuff. We've talked plenty of draft stuff. We talked mock drafts. We talked trades. I don't know how much we can talk about that, but Seth, we got the kind of the next phase in the offseason as DraftKings dropped the projected win totals for all 32 NFL teams, including the Arizona Cardinals. And I guess what this means is, one, it's content to write about, and two, we have kind of reached the next stage of the offseason where free agency seems to be basically done.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to get some late signings, things that don't move the needle quite as much. I mean, there are some veterans still out there, which is always interesting, right? Like, that's something that you just don't see. Or that it's something that's like changed in the NFL over the last, what, probably 3 or 4 years, since they've just began to really change how they do things. I mean, you got guys like Justin Simmons, Jadeveon Clowney, Kyle Duggar, guys that can impact the game still.
Honestly, yeah, Clowney's been weird because Clowney has been a late signing, it seems like, every year.
Kind of seems like what they're going to do, but that's what's going to happen over the next, that's the new trend in the NFL, right? Like, you go first wave of free agency, second wave of free agency, draft, and then it's kind of that third wave of free agency to fill those holes left. Because I mean, if you look at it, guys like Xavien Howard, right? Stephon Gilmore, I know he's coming off an injury, but Stephon Gilmore, Steven Nelson. I mean, these are
quality cover guys.
Right. Those are quality cornerbacks in a league where you just genuinely cannot find enough corners, and they're all available. And it's just telling you that, like, hey, this is where we're at right now in the NFL. These guys are not. And you know, I don't know how many of our listeners are big baseball fans. But we're seeing it in the MLB too, right? And I think some of it is guys get really bad representation. You end up thinking, hey, I'm going to get, this much money. And then you sit around and you wait and all the money's gone. And then it's like, well, we should have taken that other, right? Like, it's a silly situation, and I think that's where we'll continue to see this get to. And it just makes it exciting because it does mean that there's like a third wave of free agency, but it typically now happens after the NFL draft.
Yeah, and for teams, I guess there's the one benefit that once you hit about the draft, like right after, once you hit May, then they don't count against a compensatory formula. So,
well, I do think that's something that's all of a sudden become a huge thing, right? That people just look at, they're like, I don't want to lose that comp pick. And it's like, and you look at it and you go, really? Like, it's not signing a Steven Nelson as the Cardinals need cornerbacks, right? It's not signing a Steven Nelson for, $7 million really for a fourth round compensatory pick. Is that really worth it?
I mean, especially like, and think about it contextually, the Cardinals, like, Yelda Froholt and his playing time canceled out the fourth round compensatory pick that they were supposed to get. So,
right. And so, I mean, it all evens out in the wash usually anyways, but yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, you've got a really genuinely interesting month coming up. We're recording on Tuesday. It means technically we're, 30 days away from the 2024 NFL draft.
Yes.
And that's why getting these lines right now, and technically if we want to get super serious, we're 29 days and 19 hours away from the NFL draft. But getting these lines now is interesting because you like to get the lines coming out of the season. And then you like to get the lines, obviously, post-free agency. And then you get the lines post-draft, right? And just kind of see, because that tells you what the odds makers think of,
yes, of
what people are doing. And that's, the Cardinals, I think, after the season, they opened at 5.5, right? And I'm double checking that, but and we're going to talk about where they're at now. And it's a really interesting thing to see how that works out, because overall you're just talking about, kind of, especially for the Cardinals, we loved what they did. But it wasn't like we were like, oh, this is the key that's going to take over. Right.
And we still have major questions about two major positions, too.
That's the biggest thing, right?
Yes. I do want to note, listeners, like if you are hearing that we are having some technical difficulties with some of the audio we're trying to figure out. We've tried a few things and hasn't worked yet. So either it will clear up or you'll have to bear with us on this episode. We figured getting content out on the show was better than not on account of the sound. So our apologies for some of the choppy audio that you might be hearing throughout the show. We think the windy weather is messing with our internet connections, and who knew that wind would do that, but there, that's what we're dealing with. And in this episode of Show 527, what we're going to talk about those lines that drop. We're going to talk about the Cardinals. We're going to look at some of the projected win totals for the other teams around the NFL, what we think of them, what are some interesting ones. And then lastly, Jonathan Gannon spoke at the annual league meeting. It was breakfast with Coach Gannon in Orlando on Tuesday. And we'll just kind of run down a few of the things that there are some play. We talked about the rules changes that we kind of liked, and some of those went into effect. In fact, several of them, we don't really need to talk about those. Those are going to be, we talked about our opinion on those. Just the ones that are of note, the hip drop tackle, has been banned. That's going to cause some, it's going to be an interesting discussion moving forward. They did approve the new kickoff. You can now have a third quarterback. You can promote a third quarterback from the practice squad to be the emergency quarterback that can dress but isn't active except in an emergency. And I think for roster purposes, I think we're now going to see probably no team will keep three quarterbacks on the roster unless they loved him, because now it doesn't matter. Trade deadline pushed to week 9. The new kickoff rules have been approved with one minor tweak so that the kick out of end zone is not going to go to the 40, but rather not to the 35, but to the 30. So yeah, a bunch of those, you'll see those on our sites. And you can read that, it's out on the internet already. But in terms of what we're going to talk about, we're going to lead with the Cardinals projected win total. And Seth is, a Nostradamus. He's a clairvoyant guy, because the first thing I looked for when I saw the projected win totals were the Cardinals at, and lo and behold, they are nice at 6.5. And this is a true 6.5 over at DraftKings, because now the way, if you're a degenerate like Seth and I are, it's no big deal. Like, we understand all those numbers in terms of the odds. They're set at 6.5 as a projected win total, with the over and the under even at -110. And in other words, for those of you who are less degenerate than we are, essentially when you have the same odds over and under, is that the probability or the likelihood is that the Cardinals are implied as having the same. They are as likely to win seven or more as they are to win six or fewer, essentially. And then you'll see how some other teams' lines, they have the win total, and then the odds vary a little. Because it, rather than adjusting at a half game, so where you could, you know, you have a potential for a push. So, like, last off season, they started at 5.5, and they had higher negative odds towards the under, suggesting that it was more likely that the probability was more like that they would win fewer than five games than more than five games. Then it shifted down a game to 4.5. And yes, basically all offseason, last offseason, they either had the lowest or were tied for the lowest projected win totals. But even when they were tied for the lowest projected win total, because of the way that their odds were set, they had the shorter odds on the under. They were always considered, in terms of betting purposes, the worst team in football. The offseason now, a year later, they won four games, three of those with Kyler Murray. They probably should have won five games, and honestly, they should have won six games or seven games if you look at the Washington game and the Giants game that they choked away. But after an offseason, well, Kyler Murray's healthy, Hollywood Brown leaves, they add on to the offensive line, they add defensively, but still, it's just 6.5. Was that... Now, I would ask, I don't think you're going to say that you're surprised, but Seth, how'd you know? Do you have inside information for the sports books, the bookies over there at DraftKings?
I wish, man. If I did, I'd be making a lot more money than I do. You know, it's one of those things that you just kind of play it out, and it always kind of made sense that they'd be right around 6.5, because, like you said, they should have won with Kyler. They should have won an additional two games, and that puts them at 6. And you have to, as a Vegas or somebody that is setting a line, you have to assume that those 1-point losses, one score losses, tend to even out over time. And so since they were, I think, I'd have to look back, but I think they were in like 7-1 score games and lost, I think, 4 or 5 of them. So their thought process being, oh, it'll probably flip this year, and you know, kind of move forward in that nature. And so I think 6.5 makes sense from a goal setting standpoint. It has to, you know, the goal should be 7 wins for this team. You want to see growth. 4 to 7 would be, you know, growth with what they've done. And then if they do get, you know, 2 really impactful first round picks, or potentially 3 if they make a trade, then I think you could look at, you know, being in that 8 to 10 win range. But right now I think 6.5 is fair, because that gives you it makes you feel like 7 is a very attainable goal.
Right. That last year people were like, because I predicted 7 wins. I did. But I also thought that Kyler would be back earlier than he was. So,
but again, interestingly, if they just handle a couple of things differently, they win 6 games. So
yeah. Right. And but although we've pointed out how bad a beat, because that projected win total ended up being 4.5, and I said to hammer that 4.5, hammer that over. And thanks, Matt Prater, his first ever missed game winning field goal. I don't know how many people bet on the Cardinals on the over 4.5, but that made me sad. I mean, made me happy that they got the number 4 pick, but it also made me sad because, you know, bad beat.
Right.
Interestingly, if we want to kind of look at things, the degenerates understand the numbers, but the Cardinals last year were either had the lowest or tied for the lowest projected win total. This year, in terms of perspective, they are now viewed as better just right now than 4 other NFL teams who have lower projected win totals: the Titans, the Broncos at 5.5, the Panthers, and the Patriots at 4.5. And even within, because there are four teams total that are set at 6.5, the Raiders, the Giants, the Vikings, and the Cardinals, of that four, based on the odds that are listed, the Raiders and Vikings have negative odds on the over and plus odds on the under, suggesting that they are more likely to win 7 or more games than 6 or less, while the Cardinals are at even, and then the Giants have plus on the over and minus on the under. So if we're ranking the Cardinals in terms of perception, they are the 6th worst team in the NFL by perception, because they have better odds than the Giants do. And then you've got four teams below that have lower projected win totals, if that makes any sense for you listeners out there. And I will say this, I wonder if we'll see this bump up one. And again, listeners, in terms of betting, now the Cardinals expect more. They want, like, they're going to go into the season with the goal to make the postseason. That they believe that. And I believe that's their ceiling. I don't think that the ceiling is championship or even competing for a championship, but I believe that this team is that has a playoff ceiling, and that's kind of what they're going into this season with the mindset of doing. They're not trying. They're not going to take their lumps and feel like, oh, yeah, all right, we're just supposed to be bad. They want to win games this year. But in terms of the betting public, there's not much that we can look at this offseason and say that much has moved the needle other than Kyler being healthy. The moves that they've made in free agency aren't significant outside of the Phoenix area. They lost one of their most talented receivers in Hollywood Brown, and they got Kyler back. And so that is worth 1-2 on the projection. And then from there, you just have to wait and see. This is, as we know, the projected win totals, it is more at this time of year, is more to try and create a balance of wagers both on the over and the under.
Yeah, and it's, you want money coming in. That's the biggest thing. So you have to look at them, and like you said, so like you get, you know, like an interesting one to me is the Chargers.
Let's move on to that. So coming to next on the Rise of Seaward podcast, the best of our comments talk about the way. Let's move on and actually talk about the rest of the lines around the NFL. We don't have to go over all of them, but what are the ones that we find interesting? That's coming to next on the Rise of Seaward. We're back on the Rise of Seaward podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web. 32 teams have projected win totals. We've talked about the Cardinals. We think that's fair. We didn't beat that into the ground. But the other teams around the league, Seth, you started talking about the Chargers lines, and that's an interesting one. They're set at 8.5.
The line's not interesting to me. It's right where the money is. Like, -160 is an absurd.
That's almost not worth betting.
It's almost worth betting the under.
Right. Those plus odds, yeah.
Yeah, because the money is so high. Like, -160, for those that aren't degenerates, like, -160 means you have to bet $160 to win $100. So the equivalent would be like a $1.60 bet to win $1.
And in terms, like, when you're doing single bets, -160 is right where it's not worth doing anymore.
Yeah, anything really getting above -145, you start to go, I don't know if that's worth it. If it's a singular bet, like, you know, what they call a straight. And then on the flip side, right, the Falcons. Over under 10.5, and the under 10.5 is -145. So it's almost like
did that move? Let me see.
Yeah,
I had to find that because it was initially at -130.
Yeah, so it's on the under -145.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's interesting. You know what that is? Is that what early money is saying? People are hitting that under, and so they're making it less profitable, trying to push that to the over. But yeah, I mean, I'll be honest. Like I put out there on Twitter/X after the signing of Kirk Cousins, that's a sneaky good signing. They won 7 games with Desmond Ridder and Taylor Heinicke. Assuming a healthy Kirk Cousins. Now, the thing is like, I look at that team and it's like, oh, that's a 9-10 win team. I'm like, are they an 11 win team? Yeah, I love where that line is. I know 11's a lot. I'm like, that. I look at that, and so that's when I say, no, I can't make that bet because I don't feel confident one way or another. Looking at the Cardinals, I like at that the 6.5. I think that's the over. That would be worth doing. But like, I look at the Falcons. Well, -145. I'm like, that's not a good price. But over 10.5, I'm like, no, I just don't feel like 10 is like, and that's a really good, that's where they set it at a really good place because it's not an obvious one or the other.
No, it's really not. And that's the thing is you kind of look, you scroll through these things and you know, I wish they were in order of some sort of order, right? but you scroll through these things and you've got, you know, the projected worst teams, right? The Panthers and the Patriots down at -4.5. But a sneaky team to be considered one of the worst and one to really watch as these go. And I'm actually really interested in their line because it's at over under 5.5 is the Denver Broncos. And the Broncos over 5.5 or, you know, their win total at 5.5, -140 right now.
That's weird.
To go over. That seems like somebody's expecting a move to be made.
Right.
Because
right. Then you're like,
with all of the trades that they've made, it just doesn't make sense.
You're looking like, how is that team? Like they trade Russell Wilson away and like.
Well, Jerry Jeudy and they haven't re-signed Justin Simmons, you know, like a lot of their core is gone and you're just sitting there wondering what the plan is. And so, you know, it'd be interesting because you've got different teams at, you know, in there, like the Patriots being one of the worst teams. That makes sense. New coach,
you're going to have right now it's Jacoby Brissett and.
But it's an unknown at quarterback. The Carolina Panthers being, you know, one of the worst teams in this betting metric makes sense. But then you get a team like the Minnesota Vikings, right? And I think their number being at 6.5 talks to people just being like, they got to find a quarterback. Cause like you said, like that offense is ready made, but they got to find a quarterback.
But it's Sam Darnold. And I know that there are people that believe in Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold is freaking talented, but he makes too many mistakes. but at the same time, this is not the same Minnesota Vikings team as before, but we do have to note that the Vikings have gotten high end quarterback play statistically from guys you wouldn't expect. Sam Bradford, before he signed with the Cardinals, he was really good with them. Case Keenum, he was really good. When has Case Keenum ever been good anywhere else? He's just been okay. He was really good for the Vikings. Now, this is not this of it, but you have the talent there. You got Aaron Jones, you got Justin Jefferson, you get TJ Hockenson back, you've got Jordan Addison, you've got all this talent. That's why at the over right now is it's at -135. So you're looking at it. That's just probably 20% more likely. I think that's how the implied. I'd have to run the calculator. Yeah. I think it's about. I think it runs about 15 to 20% more likely. Well, no, actually, that's probably about 10% more likely. Is all that is about 10% more likely that they're going to win 7 or more than 6 or less. Because the 49ers that I was looking at was when I wrote about the NFC West is that they're at 10.5 with the under was minus 50, which I was like, ooh.
It's actually gone up to 11 and a half.
Or Sorry. Okay.
Yeah, so it's
They were at 11 and a half, but it was at minus 150 because they were tied with the Chiefs and the Ravens for the highest win total. But yeah, that's it. It's at 11 and a half minus 150 for the under and the plus 125, and that's a pretty disparate difference, and that's a 16 or 15.5% more likely that they're going to win 11 or less.
Well, then you look at a couple of these really like interesting ones that catch your eye, right? And obviously, like we said, the Vikings, it seems like the over is the way to go is a strong word, but then you look at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, right? A playoff team last year, played well down the stretch, won a game in the playoffs, like went 9-8, and they get set at 8.5. The bringing a lot of people back. I know they lost some stuff on defense, and they're over under 8.5, and it's plus money to take the over. And it's like people don't buy Baker, people don't buy Todd Bowles. Is it the combination of the two people are not buying? Like, that's a really interesting one to me when you juxtapose that to the Atlanta Falcons. And you made a great point about, you know, the addition of Kirk Cousins, but to have one of those at 8.5 and one of those at 10.5, like, are the Falcons two games better right now by adding a 34-year-old coming off an Achilles injury?
And never mind, this is a Falcons team that you can, if you root for, I'm sorry, you can never count on them. They will break your heart. They will.
Right.
They will break your heart.
And so it's just like, it's just weird to see that because you can see where the heavy money's at early, obviously. You know, we mentioned the Chargers. Minus 160 is just such an absurd number. You know, these on the overs and the unders, you know, the New York Jets under 9.5 minus 150. Again, an absurd number to throw money on that. The Green Bay Packers under 10.5 minus 155. Those are big numbers. You mentioned the 49ers under 11.5 minus 150. And 11 wins is a lot of wins. So I get that from that perspective. And they only won 12 last year. And everybody's thinking, well, you know, the Rams should be good again, and the Seahawks should be good again, and the Cardinals should improve. So is that where that thought process comes in, that, you know, they're going to win less than, you know, a game less this year? But the Buccaneers under 8.5 at minus 150, and then the Washington Commanders getting set at 7.5.
I don't even understand that at all.
Explain that to me. Yeah, that's a weird one to me because it's.
Well, especially it seems such a disparate line because you've got minus 145. Like, it feels like if you put that at 6.5, which seems more reasonable, you'd probably have nearly even odds on both ends to me.
Right. And so, you know, again, when you're doing this, when you're looking at this, when you're making decisions, when you're, you know, gambling with your money, which, you know, one of the things that we joke about, but we are serious about it, like, you know, it should be a responsible thing that you're doing. And so it's odd to see that line that high. Because like you said, it's like all the money's clearly going to them not winning that many games. And you look at it, I mean, you know, they've spent money along the offensive line. But I mean, and we're big Terry McLaurin fans. We love Jahan Dotson, but I mean, they're big offseason acquisitions along the offense were Zach Ertz and Austin Eckler.
I mean,
like,
and you're going to add what, Jaden Daniels to that. And while we believe Jaden, but I'm going to say this. I don't think Jaden Daniels is the talent that Kyler Murray was coming out of college. And even though they both won the Heisman, but I am clouded admittedly, I watched him at Arizona State and how he didn't improve over till from over his freshman year. His best year at Arizona State was his freshman year. Now, granted, this last year he's absolutely fantastic. I don't think he's even Joe Burrow. And I think that I don't know. Like, what about that Commanders team thinks that Jaden Daniels as a rookie is going to get them to 8 wins? Eh. But I guess that's why they have it on the under is -145.
Right. And you still love, you know, their interior defensive line with the Bama boys, right? You know, Deron Payne, Jonathan Allen are great. But, I mean, their edge guys are freaking Dorrance Armstrong and Cullen Farrell. Like, it's we liked Frankie Louvu. You know, it would have been a great signing here if it could have worked out. But, you know, Bobby Wagner, it's a really interesting decision making, and you've got Dan Quinn, you know, who's kind of fine. You got Cliff Kingsbury, who, you know, is fine. It's just a really, I don't understand it. I guess that's probably the line that just makes the least amount of sense to me. Just where it's set, because the way the betting's going, it, like you said, 6.5 makes, like, they won 4 games as well, and they have way, way more turnover than the Cardinals.
And they barely beat the Cardinals.
Right. And now they're, you know, projected to win. And again, this is, you know, they're over under set at 1 more game. Like, that's doesn't make sense, but we'll see what ends up happening with it. But yeah, that's the one that was interesting to me.
You know, it's actually what I'm looking at this. I think what is my favorite plus odd bet to make, Bears under 8.5.
Yeah, I saw that one too. 8.5 is a huge number for them. I know they had a nice season, you know, going 7-10, and they're thinking to themselves, hey, you know, improve that line and or improve that quarterback position, you should get some, you know, that's two more wins.
But is Caleb Williams as a rookie better than Justin Fields last year?
And I think we're having CJ Stroud hangover. You know, it's like, it's just, I think people are just expecting another CJ Stroud type of performance.
And it's, that's foolish, guys. That's foolish.
It's just, it's not fair to rookies. I mean, it really isn't. I mean, and so I don't know. Maybe people are looking at just the roster and going, hey, that's, you know, 2 plus wins. You get a better quarterback situation.
Granted, they do have like wins. Keenan Allen, Cole Kmet, DJ Moore. That's a really good group of guys for Caleb Williams to throw to. But nonetheless, I don't see a CJ Stroud / Andrew Luck sort of on the field success.
Well, I'd have to do like a super, super, super deep dive. But, you know, you've got, like you said, is he better than Joe Burrow was coming out? You know, and Burrow went 4, and Burrow took that team, and maybe that's what the thought process is that the Bengals were 2-14 and went to 4-12. Basically, they're 4-11-1, and that's their
going from 2 to 4 wins is way easier than going from 7-9.
And that's where I'm with you. Like, that 7.5 would have made more sense for them.
Right. But that's what I'm saying. For me, that's my favorite bet. Because, well,
yeah, it makes
because
sense.
Of the plus odds on the under, I'm like +115. Yes. Yes. I like that.
Yeah, that's a good one. The Raiders at under 6.5 at +115 is another good one, because that, you never know what you're going to get with that group.
Like, and I'll be honest,
I don't buy
as Antonio much like Pierce's. Right. Like, I think Antonio Pierce works really well as an interim. I feel like, doesn't he feel like Steve Wilkes?
Yeah, just as a little more coach of a Yeah, just a little more rah-rah of a guy, though. Like, you know, not as stoic, but yeah. On the plus side, the one I like, and I know everybody loves Detroit. We like Detroit. We like what they've built. We like what they're doing. I really like Green Bay's over 10.5. I know 11 wins is a lot. Don't get me wrong. That's a lot of wins, but this was a team that went 9-8 last year with the youngest roster offensively in the NFL. I just, that division, I'm not a huge believer in the NFC North. You know, I, like we just talked about with Chicago, like we said with Minnesota, those are two teams that have a lot of more questions than answers, if you will. They're to go over 10.5. I know 11 wins is a lot. It's two wins, but that's plus 130. So if you're looking at a plus money bet on the over side, that's my favorite. So, you know, like Jess said, his favorite under is Chicago. I love that call. My favorite over on the plus money side is Green Bay, just because I don't buy them, or I don't buy that division being good. Like, I have too many question marks about the Vikings and the Bears, and I want to see the Lions kind of do it again. Let's be fair. The teams have those hangovers. We've seen it time and time again where they come off a heartbreaking loss like the Lions did and just can't find their footing the next year. And again, we're just talking plus money bets. You know, the other one I would like, but again, kind of like the Kirk Cousins situation, is the Jets over 9.5, because I hate the AFC East. I think it's, you know, I think Miami's fool's gold. I'm really interested to see how Buffalo responds this year, because they've kind of been the same team, right, for the last, what, four seasons. But you can't, I mean, I talked about a 34, 35-year-old Kirk Cousins, right? 40-year-old Aaron Rodgers.
Coming off Achilles, torn Achilles. But here's the thing. Talent-wise, if that group is healthy, because they got Tyron Smith, they got Garrett Wilson, I like that bet. I do. But you're counting on health, which is really hard to do with how old that team is.
Right. You're counting on old injured guys staying not injured, which is, like you said, but if they are healthy,
that's a legit contender in the AFC, period. If Aaron Rodgers is healthy all year, because the talent that he has on that team, I mean, you probably feel better about that team than you did about any of those Packers teams that he had. I have one other over bet that I kind of sneaky like, and that's the Colts over 8.5 at plus 110.
Yeah, I'm really, I was thinking about that one quite a bit, because I think that's the best line out of all of this. 8.5, they won 9 last year with Gardner Minshew. I get
and
that.
And Anthony Richardson looked really, he looked raw, but exciting, like a gamer, a guy who would win games for them. Right. Now, Gardner Minshew, he was fantastic, but Anthony Richardson looked surprisingly good. I was worried about how he would look. And just when he was that raw, some of the games that he played before he got hurt, I'm like, put that on the field on a full season, especially if he's getting enough reps in the offseason. And, you know, that division will be fun, because you've got the Titans. If you get a bounce back year from if Trevor Lawrence can stay healthy, that's going to be a competitive division, I think, that AFC South.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. He's, you know, he's a special, unique talent. And, man, again, if he can stay healthy, they were 2-2 when he went out. And I know 4 games is not a sample size worth really taking into account, but they were 2-2 when he went out. I know their fans because I am friends with a lot of their fans. I know their fans are not excited about their offseason. And so I tend to think a lot of times that books prey on that stuff. When vocal fan bases like the Colts are very, very down on like what's going on, you're able to prey on that and be like, oh, and that's why you see a lot of money going that way right now. And the funny thing is they're just down because they didn't make any splashes, right? Like they're like, no, we got a young group that we like we're going to continue to grow it. And their fans are like, no, you gotta go make a big play somewhere. So, you're kind of where the Cardinals are, and you're just like, hey, let's just take this group and give them another year to grow. So, yeah, I really like that as well, Jess. I think that's a good one because again, it's. And this is a strong statement, and I don't mean this in a negative way. It's dangerous to assume Houston and CJ Stroud are going to just get better because that would be a historical first two seasons.
Yeah. I mean, you have to like, and here's the thing. Stroud can still play at that same level. That doesn't mean the team's going to have the same sort of success.
Right. So, but yeah, I think the totals this year, I thought, you know, for the most part, you know what, 27 of the 32 were really kind of where they should be. Kind of makes you wonder, like, kind of put your money back in your pocket type of thing, really. I don't feel confident enough one way or the other about this. But there were some outliers that you're definitely like, that didn't make a whole lot of sense that you're like, huh. But now those odds have skewed so poorly that you don't want to make those kind of bets either.
Exactly. Coming up next on the Rise Up Spirit podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about some of the stuff that we heard from Jonathan Gannon, topics, things of that nature, players and things like that. That's coming up next on Rise Up Spirit. We're back on the Rise Up Spirit podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web, talking about what Jonathan Gannon talked about in Orlando at the coach's breakfast at the annual league meeting. He didn't have anything really to say about trading the pick, drafting Marvin Harrison, giving just the company line is that the decision that will be made, he trusts the decision will be the best for the organization. I'm more interested in kind of some of the other stuff that he said. One was obviously we're going to see them have another joint practice this off season. They're going to, and when he said it's going to be against a really good AFC team, I wanted to like, does that mean the Chiefs? Because the Chiefs have seemed to be kind of a common preseason opponent this year. They've got two preseason road games. I like the joint practices, and it worked out perfectly last year with the Vikings in the sense that when you do it in the third preseason game, that's how you get your vets and starters ready. Is you give them the competitive reps in practice. And you let the scrubs, sorry guys, but lack of a better word, let the guys battling for roster spots and practice squad spots play the actual preseason game.
Yeah, and that's what it's about, right? I mean, we're at the point now where the NFL at 17 games and this isn't the year that they're pushing for 18, right? It's next year?
No, that hasn't come up quite yet, no.
Yeah, so they're going to be pushing for 18 games in the next, you know, year or two, which means I assume they're likely to bring the preseason down to two games, right?
Yeah, so, say they will. That's what they want to do is to trim that down. And then guess what? If it goes down to two, you'll see. I wonder if they will do, if that's going to be the case, if they're going to do two preseason games, if that happens, if they would have a full like 2 weeks, let's see, you have two preseason games
and then two full weeks of practice before.
Yeah. That'll probably make the most sense the way I, but I mean, so yeah, I mean, you want to get working against ones and no other, which that's what makes it hard is, you know, people want to get on, whether it's Gannon or you know, Kyler Murray or whoever, and I know it wasn't Kyler last year, but people want to get on. But it's like if they run Kyler Murray out there against the third string, you know, Denver Broncos, who, you know, is a common preseason opponent, it doesn't do a whole lot. It's kind of like what we talk about when the Cardinals are looking good against their own team, and we're like, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Like, what do we mean? What does that look like?
Right.
Or like, so, like when Blaine Gabbert's playing against the threes and he's looking like the best player on the field, and that's because he's the 10-year vet who was drafted in the first round. He should look like overall, the best player on the field.
and so it's just, you know, it's just one of those situations that I think getting joint practices against a team, like you said, he's probably being nice and talking about the Broncos, if we're being honest.
You know? That would be a really good AFC team. I mean, and but in fairness, they faced the Chiefs. They faced the Ravens. Unless that, I mean, the other team, because we're used to seeing the AFC West. We're used to seeing the Chargers and the Broncos. The Chargers and the Broncos have been preseason, like preseason four or preseason three opponents. It feels like 15 of the last 20 years.
Right. It's the convenience for both teams that whoever does have to travel, it's a short trip. You know, especially because they play that on a Thursday now, right? So it's like you leave on a Tuesday or a Wednesday and it's a short trip, get there and get back and things of that nature. So yeah, I mean, you want those reps, you have to have those reps to get to where you want to be at. And like we say all the time, when you go against yourself, sometimes it is fool's gold. You're like, oh, the offense looks great, or oh, the defense looks great. And you're like, oh wait, that's because the other side of the ball is just awful. So getting reps against a team, whether it is the Broncos, and you know, we're joking around, but kind of seriously, you know, they're expected not to be great this year. That still gives you live reps, and you're like, hey, we're not going to be a bottom five team in the NFL, barring injuries. That's actually a good thing, right? And so, you know, it's important. And then, you know, if you go against a great team, like you said, like the Ravens or the Chiefs, you go,
or maybe it's the Texans. Who knows? Maybe.
Yeah, Texans could be a good one. And you have to think about it too. Typically, you think about it from a logistics standpoint. So if it's an AFC team, like Jess said, it's going to be one of the AFC West teams. Could, I mean, I know we're joking around, but it could be the Raiders. It could be the Chargers. And like you said, probably not the Chiefs. That might be too far, but maybe not. But the Texans or, you know, other teams in that vicinity are kind of where you don't expect them.
They went to Minnesota last year, so
but that was a preseason game too. So that'll be, you know, once we get the preseason schedule, we'll know who he's talking about.
That's
right.
Well, we're not gonna find that out till May, because they're not gonna break up all the pre-draft talk. They're gonna push the schedule out till May because the draft is over. Yeah, that's how that works. So expect the schedule in May. Something we've talked about on this show a number of times, especially this offseason, and how perhaps this is the reason why they've not been active in adding a pass rusher and edge defender. Zaven Collins. Jonathan Gannon seems to believe in him. I mean, we'll know how much they believe in if they pick up that $13 or $14 million fifth-year option. Right. But, you know, he said he's got all the tools. He's shown on tape. He can do everything that we need to do to be a premium player. He needs to consistently doing that every single day. He's so bright and smart. But at that position, there's times that we talk to him about, hey, man, you just got to, like, cut it loose. You can't overthink this. And in fairness, that vibes with his career arc, because what before he started getting all the playing time at inside backer, what was his biggest problem? He was overthinking. And then we saw him play well. He got moved to the position last year. He got moved to the edge. We'll say this. He played a lot. They put a lot on his plate in terms of the types of role that he had. He didn't play the same number of snaps as he did when he was off the ball, because they don't come off the field pretty much. And he was he's a guy that they continue to lean on. And 3.5 sacks, that's not what you want from one of your starting outside backers, first round draft pick. But maybe they see something a little more. Maybe he's not going to be an 11 to 12 sack guy, but
if he gets you seven and eight,
that'd be good, yes. Especially with the other things that he can do, because he does give you nice. He is able to drop into coverage. He is good in run support. There's things that he did really well, and maybe, but what we do, can we believe in Zaven Collins and B.J. Ojulari with what we saw last year? Like, we liked B.J. Ojulari as a rookie, and history says that year too is when you really kind of see what those really good pass rushers are. But Zaven are like, is that what they're going to do again? And maybe that is what they're going to do.
Yeah, and so we'll have to wait and see. But they seem incredibly excited about him, which is, I mean, we can only go off of what we see and what we know, and it's not easy. It's not an easy thing to believe in. Let's just put it that way.
I mean, there was more love for Kyler Murray, and I think one of the best things that we've seen since the hiring of Jonathan Gannon and Monty Austinfort is just the support that Kyler Murray's getting from the organization. You know, I don't know. It's hard to tell how many of those of the things that were around Kyler's narrative, how much of that was actually true. There's always truth to it. Okay, he wasn't great. He was not social with all the teammates. And that's personality-wise, that's been him. He went from being quiet to not talking to anyone to have his guys to be like the good guys on the team. Buda Baker recently said, he's now talking to everyone, practice squatters, low guys on the roster. He's really upped his status as a leader, and I think in part that was just something natural that was happening over time as he felt more comfortable as a pro. But to hear Jonathan Gannon every single time that he talks about Kyler Murray, and we know, it's a crazy thing, Cliff Kingsbury, we knew, was just happy to have Kyler. Like, he'd been a fan of Kyler Murray since he was 15 years old. Gannon gushes about Kyler every chance that he gets, and it's refreshing as a fan, as a Kyler supporter myself, as a believer in the talent of Kyler Murray, to hear that the organization is now giving him the support that you would hope that a franchise would give their franchise quarterback. I love it. I'm here for all of it. And it feels, honestly, genuine when Gannon, the way he talks about Kyler.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those things, and you kind of talked about it from the beginning, about how they were going to really push and challenge him, right? And I think you're seeing that more now, and you're seeing how that plays off one another, is that sometimes it's just about finding the right fit as a coach or a guy that gets the best out of a very talented player, and it seems like that's where they're at right now. But you know, we'll see how this kind of wraps up over the next 2 years. This is you'd have to assume this is, you know, where they're looking at the future. And like we said, the beautiful kind of bow tie situation on this is those seven wins have to show up, or it's all of a sudden it's time to start looking, because from Monty and Jonathan Gannon's standpoint, you can't continue to stay stuck in the mud, and they've as much as we like every situation that's been going on within this group, now it's about winning, right? Like we believe that they're affecting culture change, and that they're changing the perception of this organization, and that they're changing how this organization works. But now it's time to actually show your work, right?
Yeah, that's the thing now, is they need to be more than a scrappy bad team. They need to be a scrappy team that gets some of those wins, and they're on track for that. The add what they did defensively. Some important news.
I was gonna say, I know you're gonna talk about Greg Dortch here in a second, so I got something I wanted to share with you once you bring him up.
Yeah, so I was Kaiser White, LJ Collier. They're going to be fully healthy by the time offseason work starts. Dante Stills, his knee injury wasn't serious. He's healthy. So those are important things to note. So those guys were going to be important in Kaiser White's. Like, his loss was tremendous because he set the tone for that team. Oh, my gosh.
Well, and he was kind of the only one that knew what was going on defense.
He did. But when he was playing, remember, we talked about just the – I don't know if I've ever seen a Cardinals team fly to the ball like that. And that was all about Kaiser. He played so violently, the way, like, he was playing fast. He was playing violent. He was playing bad intentions, hitting guys hard. Even a couple times, hard when he shouldn't have hit him hard. But yeah, it was Greg Dortch. Maybe it's time to start believing in him. I'm going to drag my feet on this. Especially if there are two receiver moves left to be made, right? If they go and get another receiver now that we're not expecting, and draft a guy like Marvin Harrison Jr. or whoever it is, Greg Dortch is going to move down to that number four slot. That said, maybe he turns it. I don't expect a big year from him, but they still believe that this. It appears they have cleared the obstacles for his playing time now, at least. They've cleared they've cleared those obstacles to where he's going to be more than just a return guy. He will be this year's gadget guy plus. And he's challenged himself, and they say it is like he's got to keep doing things, and he needs to expand his role, is what Gannon said. And In echoing what Gannon said last year matched what Cliff said the year before, is that he just needs to do all the things. When we know he's dynamic when he gets the ball in his hands. It's when the ball doesn't go to his hands. What is he doing in those plays? Is he running good routes when he knows the ball's gonna get, not gonna, is he gonna, is he a willing blocker? No, granted, he's tiny. But is he doing all the other things? And he seems to be on track for that, and that's why he was rewarded with playing time. But they're setting things up for him to be able to do better this year.
Right, and that's the big thing. And you can see that he's bought in with the situation too. I don't know if you saw it, but the absurdity, and we don't have to talk about it. We can talk about it on Thursday if we want to, but the absurd Mike Tannenbaum mock draft on
Dear
ESPN.
Lord. Yes, that'll be Thursday top.
Yeah. So Mike Tannenbaum, came up with the crazy scenario, and Dortch responded, didn't say much, just one little emoji, the crying laughing emoji. And it's just such a funny situation to see that, because I think it goes to both things. You've got a guy in Dortch that, has made his way, that has worked from literally the practice squad up into this point. But then, what you talked about with Kyler, that there's a true, genuine belief within everybody in that organization that this is the guy that's going to take them to, you know, respectability and be the guy that creates this being a good NFL franchise. And so I just, I don't know, man, like, it just feels like there's something different in the air. And like we said, now it's just about actually doing it, right?
Yeah.
Because the talk, the laughing emojis, all of that stuff is great. We love it. Trust us. Like, it felt for a couple of years there like that was missing, right? Like you said, this all feels very genuine. But now it has to mean something.
Yeah, yes. But with that, we'll wrap up this edition of the Rise of Spirit podcast, Betchart Cardinals Talk on the Web. We'll have at least something to talk about, I'm sure, on Thursday, where we can rip the crap out of Mike Tannenbaum for his absurd mock draft. And there'll be something for sure that comes up by then as well. So this is episode 427. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess. We'll be back in a couple of days, and we've got more draft talk coming over the next few weeks. Thanks for listening, as always. All right. Stopping the recording. And
thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.
Rise up! Sea Red! Rise!